Briefly, in our area, in regard to this question, and also your third point there about wrong attitude towards worship. One of the denominational Bible preachers, so-called, on the radio, made a lot of comments about the reason for coming together on the Lord's Day. And he eased into his final argument and crowning point. He said, when you go to worship, forget about worshiping God, he said. Go to build yourself up. I think that is really the key of their limited understanding.
I agree with that assessment. And that has been noted in a very good article that was penned and was published in the Firm Foundation. I just didn't have the time to include reference to it in the study here. But the writer of this particular article made the point that a lot of people think that we go to worship to please ourselves. And he even quoted from one of his own brethren who mentioned things like, well, the songs we sing to please ourselves, and so on and so forth. And he pointed out from the definition of the word proskuneo, to do obeisance to, that entirely separate from the idea of proskuneo or worship was the idea of pleasing self. Proskuneo implied pleasing the object of obeisance. Now, of course, there could be proskuneo, there could be obeisance done in the wrong spirit or in the wrong way. So that's why the scriptures teach us that for worship to be acceptable, it has to be directed to the right object, and it has to be in spirit and in truth. And this idea that we're going to worship to be entertained, or that it's strictly to build us up, which does result when we please God in worship, and when we follow His pattern and example.
First time I heard about Children's Church, next door neighbor down in Big Spring, Texas, their little boy was 5 years old. He was over at my house on a Saturday, and I was painting a picture, and he kept fooling with the paints and brushes, and I asked him not to do that, and gave him a piece of paper and a little brush, told him to paint his own picture. So he did that for a moment, and then he was back into my paints. And so I picked him up, set him down in the chair, and I told him, I said, now you're going to have to obey me because you're in my home. And he just reared back and spit right in my face. So I took him home, and Mother apologized, and then that was on a Saturday. On a Sunday afternoon, he knocked on my door, and he said, I have something to tell you. And I said, what is it? He said, I was baptized today. And he went to a Baptist church. Now remember, he's 5 years old. He said, I was baptized today. And he said, I'm going to start going to Children's Church. And I said, well, good. And I thought, going to Children's Church, if that's going to help, that might be good. But I noticed something that was very, very interesting. The mother would take him to Children's Church, and she would come back home. And I wondered if maybe he was not getting teaching. Well, I was pretty sure that he was not getting the proper teaching in the home. But I've wondered over the years if by going to Children's Church, if that's going to take care of the problem. One other comment I'd like to make would be this. If we're really serious about teaching children in the home and in the public assembly, one assembly, I think as teachers and preachers, we'd better keep the children in mind when we're preparing our lessons and our sermons. Because many times we talk over their heads. We give the Greek and all of this, which is good as long as it's in balance. And I think we'd better start teaching from the pulpit to everybody in the audience. And also, if a mother has a child in the audience and he begins to whimper and misbehave, if we're in the pulpit and we give them a dirty look, then that's going to say to the mother, I'm not wanted in this assembly. And I think things like this we better consider, because I think the reason the nursery came about is because some preachers just absolutely would not tolerate a child in the audience that would make a noise, so the mother would run out. I wonder if this might be the forerunner of having the children segregated so that as adults we might better communicate with one another.
That has been a contributing factor, and that's playing from a lot of sources. One thing that these brethren argue, you know, when they argue for children's churches, they appeal to precedent practice of simultaneous assemblies, second offering, and so forth. And one of the things is, well, we have a nursery. Why can't we have a children's church? And then getting to your point about preachers and teachers speaking, including children, one guy made a very good observation. He said, you know, despite the fact that we are considered an educated nation, most people's level of understanding is directed for the purpose of communication, it is in that area between what we call sixth grade and eighth grade. That's where most people understand and perceive things at. That's why the TV programmers design all their programs for that age level. They know that they're getting most of America when they design their programs for that level. So as one fellow observed, when we preach so-called children's church sermons, and he was objecting to children's church, but he's making this observation, when we preach so-called children's sermons, we're actually reaching most of the church. And I appreciate the remark, you know, let's not preach over their heads. I know that I learned lessons even as a very young person. And one that I'll just give as an example. When I was very young, and I probably wasn't anywhere near 4 years old yet. I was probably maybe three or four. But I remember my mother going to the front of the church. I didn't know what in the world was going on. Mom went to the front of the church. And so I followed her up there. Well, she was making a confession. My mother had been married outside of the Lord. She'd come to the conclusion that she had done wrong, that she had set a wrong example in that. And my brothers and my sisters and I were all raised, beginning from that point on, that you don't marry outside the Lord. And there was a lesson that I understood when I was 5 years old. And I'd sit in church and cry because I knew my daddy was lost, because I knew that my mother had gotten herself in a situation that, you know, wasn't scriptural, but she had to live with it, she had to live in it. And so children can learn. They have a capacity to learn at a very young age. And they do this by observation. I appreciate your remarks very much.
All right. In elaborating on children's church, so you mentioned some scriptures that refer to the fact of the whole assembly being gathered together in terms of the teaching and the program of teaching. And that the comment you just made in gearing the teaching more towards some of the children or some of the younger people. Elaborate a little bit on how your view is of, say, like, for instance, youth meetings and those kinds of things that are geared more towards a particular segment of the church.
Now, as is practiced among us, I don't believe that our young people's meetings are scriptural in the least. Generally, from what we call a young people's meeting, is where certain young men are entrusted with the responsibility of actually taking care of the items of worship. And generally it's also an occasion for parents to bring their children to wherever the meeting is being held so they can have association with other young people. But when we say young people's meeting, what we're saying is that the service is conducted by young people. Now, I know a fella who, when he first read the OPA about a young people's meeting, he thought it was children's church. He thought we had children's church. And I had to explain to him, no, we don't have children's church. This is not church for children. Everybody comes. Everybody is invited. It is giving experience to young men to develop their talents in teaching, singing, leading prayer, and so forth. Does that answer your question?
Smith, have you investigated who takes care of the children's church? I mean, who is in charge of it? This, to me, is another item that I think could only exist under specialized circumstances when we were down in Durant, the church in Durant, Oklahoma, that Aggressive Church has, Children's Church, and I asked the people who were involved in it point blank, well, who takes care of this group of kids over next door, you know, when the worship's going on? They said, oh, well, two or three of the brethren take care of it. So I said, well, don't they have any responsibility to worship? They said, oh, well, you know, they go at night and take the communion. So, I mean, you know, again, it can only exist under those digressive conditions.
Right. Like the one congregation down the road always has an elder present. And another thing, and I thought of including it as a fifth implication, and I decided to maybe bring it out in the question and answer, which I'm able to do, so I'll do it. There is, in a lot of places, the responsibility of conducting children's church entrusted to the women. And, of course, if you read from that Christian Standard article, the so-called minister was a woman. It has implications as far as bringing women into the preaching work of the church. Now, we have already seen some lectureships held specifically for women among the digressives, and they're headed in that direction. It may take a little while, but the day will come when they'll have women ministers. I'm sure that Christian church, the liberal element of the Christian church, is not too far from that, and we'll just have to see.
I'd like to address two, three points. About 10 years ago, Irvin Barnes and I were driving, I think it was in Barrable, Arkansas, discussing a variety of things, and I said, you know, I predict that the digressives will have women preachers. And Irvin, and I say this in no disrespect to Irvin, said, oh, I really don't think so. He said, you know, that has pretty well been thought out. But, you know, in keeping with what you just said, I don't believe that. I hold with my original observation. We get a little paper called the Christian Chronicle, and I think probably a lot of you get that. I'm amazed at the number of so-called women missionaries that are being sent to foreign countries. And a lot of them are called missionaries. And a lot of them are being sent by themselves to do missionary work, if you can believe it. There are a variety of other situations that I think are leading in that direction. You take people who have grown up in the so-called children's church with women basically preaching, directing the thing. They're not going to react adversely when they grow up and become adults to the idea of women preachers. So I think we're very much on the way. In the lectureships that the digressives hold, they almost invariably have women that preach to women. So they're really about halfway there already. Lois McCord is very frequently on these schedules, and she very frequently addresses the women during these lectureships. Another thing I'd like to point out is I think we need to be very careful about extremes. And I don't want to try to be controversial. But, you know, this thing about babies crying can go extremes either direction. There are situations in which the least little noise and somebody has a big fit about it, I think that's an extreme. But, you know, at one congregation, as a matter of fact, the congregation that I grew up in, at one time it got so bad that Carl Johnson was holding a meeting. It got so bad that at times during his sermons, he would just have to literally stop and just wait. And just wait. And I think sometimes he had to wait 5 minutes for the thing to calm down. Now, you know, the thing I'm pointing out is let's be careful about extremes. Let's be careful about getting to the point that we'll tolerate anything and everything in that area. I think there has to be some kind of rationale when it comes to this particular thing. And I think the same thing applies to our sermons. You know, I think we need to be careful about reducing everything to the lowest common denominator. I think we need to be careful about underestimating the intelligence and the ability of a child to learn. I think all of us might be surprised if we really understood the capacity of a child to learn. Sometimes their capacity to learn excels ours. I'm not saying that we shouldn't at times direct things to you know, the various age groups. I do that. There are times when I feel that things are, for example, applicable to teenagers, and I like to address that to them, just as Paul did when he was talking to Timothy, and he was talking about youthful lust, because he knew Timothy was a young man, and when you're young, those fires are intense. So the point I'm making is I don't think we want to go into any extremes. We don't want to stay up in the clouds and preach to PhDs, or we don't want to get on some kind of very infantile level. I think we we need to avoid those extremes. Just a comment I want to make.
I appreciate the comments. You know, we've all learned as preachers and teachers that we must preach to our audience. When we have outsiders to preach, you know, so the outsiders can be informed of the terms of the gospel and so forth, evangelistic lessons. But the church can get good out of those lessons, vice versa. You teach to the church, doctrinal lessons, or what have you, for the church's edification. Then outsiders who maybe don't understand that much about the church or scriptural things, they can still learn from that kind of lesson. Children can learn, as I pointed out already. Children can learn from lessons that are actually addressed to an adult situation. And I think also to reiterate what you said and what I said earlier, and what we all realize is that we have to avoid preaching over people's head. And of course, like you said, like Alfred said, extremes must be avoided. We don't want to, you know, just be feeding our congregations with spiritual babble all the time either.
Any other questions or comments?